So last night we talked about how Jesus doesn't like to be quarantined, how he loves to be invited into different parts of our lives, and a little bit about how following Jesus is more about finding Jesus and knowing him than about what we can show for it. So tonight we're going to be looking at Peter's relationship with Jesus a few years down the road. After he left everything to traipse around Judea with Jesus, looking at what following Jesus actually looks like for him and why it is still better than anything else he could ever have. We're going to be looking at a passage that deals with a lot of the practicals of following Jesus and asking the questions of why do we follow Jesus, what do we actually do when we follow Jesus, and what is the result. I'm going to go ahead and read this for us and then we will start. This light was like really funny to me.
Hey, it works, right?
It does. Good job. So this passage is out of Matthew 14. This is right after Jesus feeds the 5,000. It says, "Immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But the boat by this time was a long way from the land, beaten by the waves, for the wind was against them. And in the fourth watch of the night, he came to them, walking on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and said, 'It is a ghost!' And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, 'Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid.' And Peter, answered him, 'Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water.' He said, 'Come.' So Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came to Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried out, 'Lord, save me!' Jesus immediately reached out his hand and took hold of him, saying to him, 'Oh, you of little faith, why do you doubt?' And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. And those in the boat worshipped him, saying, 'Truly you are the Son of God.'" I'm going to go ahead and pray, and then we can start. Father, thanks for today again, and for all the fun that we have had and all the good conversations as well. I pray just again that you would be here tonight, that this night would be just about you, not about me or about anyone else here, but just about you and your glory and your Son. So Father, thank you for who you are and for bringing each of us here. In your name we pray these things. Light. I came about. Thanks. So, the practicals of following Jesus. The first question we're asking is, what do we actually do as disciples of Jesus? So throughout this whole passage, we see Peter doing what Jesus is doing. He listens to his superiors and he walks on water. We see Jesus going up on the mountain after this feeding of the 5,000 has happened to be with God and to pray and to figure out what the next move is. Peter also listens to Jesus when he tells him to go across the lake in a boat, even though Peter's like, "Jesus, how are you going to get across the lake to the boat?" And Peter only walks on water because Jesus is doing it first. Jesus leads by example. So, as for like what we're doing as disciples of Jesus, I think we can take away from this interaction that the whole idea of following Jesus is that he has actually gone before us. And we do what the one we are following is doing. And this is what it means to be a disciple. Have you guys all seen the like Rob Bell Numa videos? Anyone? Anyone? Okay, sweet. Have you seen, there's this one called Dust that I really like that's actually about this passage. And I really like what it has to say, so even if you've seen it, I'm going to go ahead and talk about it. So back when Jesus lived, rabbis were these like teachers of Jewish law, and they were like the rock stars of Jewish culture, and they had their like selected groupies and people that literally like followed them around all the time, and these were their disciples. And it was really competitive to become disciples of rabbis because you had to basically memorize the entire Old Testament. Like, it's a lot of things to memorize. And you had to have like super insightful comments to say about it. And as we were talking about yesterday, Peter and all his friends weren't exactly the best of the best, and Jesus had called each of them from different jobs. They're fishermen or tax collectors or other things. So they essentially had like failed the process of becoming a disciple, which is what all young Jewish boys went through. So they like literally were not the best. They had kind of dropped out of the process. But Jesus, who loves taking the lowly and the not so smart and the weak to do his work, chose them to follow him. He chose them of all people to be his disciples. And what it meant to be a disciple of a particular rabbi was that you would carry on the traditions and teachings of your rabbi after he died. And so the reason that he chose you was that he thought you were capable of doing all the things that he did. The idea was that as a disciple, you would follow so close in your rabbi's footsteps, follow being the key word here, that you would be covered in the dust he kicked up while he was walking. So if Jordan was your rabbi, you would all grow beards and like catch his Mountain Dew as he like drank it and
do
like,
it.
Do all sorts of other things that he does.
Do it.
Because you would be like your greatest aspiration to be like Jordan.
Don't do it.
So yeah, Jesus thinks that Peter and his like bum friends are capable of doing what he does, and Jesus thinks each of us who he has called to follow him is capable of doing what he does. And if you actually like stop to think about it, this is like ridiculous. It's like, Jesus, what are you thinking? And it kind of like blows my mind, because when we think about what Jesus does and even what his disciples do in the New Testament, they like heal the sick and they open the eyes of the blind. They drive out demons. They prophesy what's going to happen to people and it happens. They invite like thousands of people at a time into relationships with God and they die for their faith because they're so sure that there's something better for them than what they're experiencing here. So do you actually believe that Jesus had called you to be a part of this and to do things like this? Do you actually live like this? I don't think any of us do. But the reality is that Jesus has called each and every one of us into his service and into following him in these crazy ways. Like, yeah, it's weird to think about. But it is possible. And it's been really cool over the past couple years. I've had friends who have like prayed for people and they've been healed, and who have like prayed for people and like told them things about them that there's no way that they could have known, who have like told me these things that have like come true, and they like pray with them through really hard times and like things work out, and they speak real truth. And even crazier than that, I've begun to see myself do these things and to step out in faith in following Jesus and learning to walk the earth like he did. Yeah, like praying is like so exciting. Like praying for people and like listening. Okay, I'm going to take this off my neck because all the bugs are flocking to my head. But I'm going to fall off. But yeah, Jesus is around, and praying, I think, is one way that we really access what he is doing. But yeah, the disciples were teenagers in like early 20s, which is exactly my age and your age. And they were doing all these crazy things. I mean, look at Peter, who like walks on the water in this passage. These things clearly wouldn't be possible without Jesus, and nothing that I'm talking about would ever be possible without Jesus. Following Jesus is always an adventure because Jesus goes like crazy places, and he brings us along with him if we are willing to listen and respond. So as ridiculous as this sounds, as much as you'd be like, I'm not prepared to like heal people or like all these things, I think we can take a lot of comfort in knowing that anywhere Jesus leads us, is a place that he has already been, and he doesn't ask us to do anything that he doesn't do. So we see Jesus carrying out pretty much all of the commandments he gives us in the Gospels. He tells us to turn the other cheek, and we see him doing that while he's being crucified. He tells us to love our enemies, and he asks God to forgive those who are nailing his hands to the cross. He tells us to love the poor, and these are the people that he spends all of his time with. I can't even think of a command that Jesus doesn't stick to himself. So there's comfort in knowing that Jesus doesn't ask us to do anything that he doesn't understand going through. In the past couple months, Jesus has been calling me to forgive some people who really hurt me by saying that they were busy and actually just hanging out with other people, and by letting down the expectations that I had for those friendships. And this may sound kind of insignificant in the grand scheme of things, but I'm someone who doesn't really open up to anyone else very easily. And it takes me a really long time to trust people enough to actually be honest with them about how I'm doing and the ways that I'm struggling. And my friends who hurt me were the ones that I had felt like I could really trust and who I had opened up to more than I have ever before. And so I felt super abandoned and betrayed when they let me down. And I was praying about it. And I was like, God, I don't know what to do about this. And I felt really convicted that I needed to forgive these people and not only forgive them, but actually like actively love them. And it was like, Jesus, I don't know if I can do this. And there were honestly a few days when I didn't think I had it in me to open up and trust and forgive and love this person again. But thankfully, because of the grace of God, I really experienced just the power of the knowledge that Jesus knows what this feels like to be hurt by someone and to love and forgive. Right before Jesus was going to die, he went to pray with three of his disciples, who were his closest friends, Peter, James, and John, in the Garden of Gethsemane. He tells them that his soul is sorrowful to the point of death, and he needs them to pray for him. And so he goes off, and he's praying, and he's sweating like drops of blood, because he's just so freaked out about the experience that he's about to have. And he comes back, and they're all sleeping. And he like wakes them up, and he's like, you guys, I really need you to pray for me. I really need you to be here for me right now, because I don't know what to do. And so he goes off again, and he's like praying, and he's like flat on his face before God, because he, thinking about being crucified and having the weight of the sin of the whole world on your shoulders is just crazy. And he comes back again, and they're asleep. And then 5 minutes later, they all run away when he's being arrested. After they've all promised him, Jesus, we're going to go with you to the very end. So even Jesus' best friends that he had here on earth let him down when he needed them the most. But he still forgave them. He didn't only forgive them, but he actively loved them and he died for them. And because Jesus does that, and because his blood covers us and his grace frees us, by his power I was able to forgive my friends and trust them and love them again. Those have been some of the best friendships that I've had. Jesus only ever tells us to follow him where he is already gone. Alright, so next question that we are going to ask about what it means to follow Jesus is, why do we obey his commands, and why do we even follow him? So what are some common reasons that we do things for in everyday life? I think some things are like get good grades and get into good colleges and like make lots of money and be successful and happy, or like make someone notice us, someone special maybe, or like feel good about ourselves, or maybe it's for like our own personal benefit. I want to like work out and like be healthy, or maybe because people tell us to do things, or maybe because we just like love doing them and we don't really care. So let's look at why Peter walks on water. It says, shortly before dawn, and this like shortly before dawn means it was like between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. Like really weird things happen that late at night. Believe me. So Jesus, like, went out to them walking on the lake. And when the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and they cried out in fear. And I, like, think this is really funny because I imagine that, like, fishermen or, like, sailors had all these, like, superstitions about ghosts. And they were like, "We finally saw one!" Maybe they didn't actually do this, but, like, yeah. I think it's funny. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid." "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. So Peter sees something crazy. He sees this ghost-looking thing walking out on the water, and he hears it might be Jesus, and he's like, "I want to join," because if Jesus is doing it, then, like, by the definition of what it means to be a disciple, he should be able to do it. To identify Jesus, he doesn't ask something like, "Hey, what was that joke Andrew told the other day?" Which I feel like, I mean, if I had a friend, I would probably ask him something like that. But he says, "If it's you, tell me to do what you're doing." The defining characteristic of Peter's relationship with Jesus is that if Jesus is doing it, he wants to do it. Why? Not so he can be just a superstar disciple. Although this, I think, was probably a part of it a lot of the time, which is why Peter fails a lot. But at the core, at its best, I think it's because Peter wants to be close to Jesus. When he wants to be close to his leader, and in shared experiences, there's a lot of closeness. We learn a lot about someone, and we build trust and relationship when we go through things together. And like Peter, I think ultimately the reward that we are looking for when we are obeying what Jesus says to do, and when we are trying to follow in Jesus' footsteps, is that we enter into a deeper, truer relationship with him. The most fulfilling motivation that we could have in following Jesus' commands is to be close to Jesus and to know him more. Think of how much your relationship with Jesus would change if you did everything for the sake of finding Jesus. You wouldn't worry about the results or what anyone thought of you, because you would be too busy looking for and finding Jesus in the process. Having this motivation leaves no room for trying to get attention from other people by looking cool when we're acting all spiritual. This leaves no room for pride and trying to boost our egos and feel good about ourselves, like we're better than other people, because we're not. Wanting desperately to be close to Jesus leaves no room for rules-oriented Christianity. It's not about crossing things off our list. It leaves no room for shoulds, like, "I'll do this because I should," or "I won't because I just shouldn't." Because Jesus wants so much more for us than just following him like we're robots or slaves. He wants honesty and freedom and joy and life for us. We cannot impress Jesus or earn his love, because he already loves us more than we could ever imagine. The ultimate reward is not even doing all these amazing things like walking on water, or like healing people, or like doing crazy prayer things, or seeing Jesus transform lives, although we will see amazing things, and it's like so exciting to see God working in us and through us, and like seeing people changed by meeting Jesus. But the greatest reward of all is being closer to Jesus. It's feeling what he feels, and having companionship with him through both his successes and his suffering, which, as I mentioned before, is the greatest joy that I have yet experienced in my almost 21 years of life. Some of you may be like, "Dang, you must not have been living," but really, definitely is the greatest joy. So Peter follows Jesus out onto the water because he wants to do what Jesus is doing and be where Jesus is, because Jesus is the most important thing to him. So what happens to him, and what happens to us when we take risks for Jesus? It says, when Peter got down out of the boat and walked on water and came toward Jesus, but when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cries out, "Lord, save me." So Peter's doing great. He's like walking on the water, but then he like sees what he's actually doing, and he stops to look around and think about the ridiculous nature of walking on water, and he panics. And like early in the passage, it talks about how the boat they were in was buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. And the Greek meaning for the word buffeted literally means tortured, tormented, or harassed. So it's like ridiculously stormy. And if the wind and the waves were torturing this 30-foot boat, imagine what the waves and the wind look like to Peter, who's like probably like five, six men. I think they were shorter back then. But yeah, he realizes, wait, I have no protection. I'm a considerable way away from the boat. Sure, I'm a good swimmer, but if I get caught in this storm, there's no way I'm getting out alive. And so he freaks out, and he starts doing what he's most afraid of, sinking. And so he yells, Lord, save me. And Jesus' response to Peter's cry for help is that immediately Jesus reached out his hand and he caught him. You have little faith, he said. Why did you doubt? So what is Peter doubting? I think there are two things. He's doubting both Jesus and he's doubting himself. So he doubts Jesus' goodness. Kind of imagine these things running through Peter's head, like, Jesus, why did you bring me out here just to sink and drown and die? He doesn't trust that Jesus will take care of him and give him what he needs, whether it's supernatural walking on water power or strong arms to swim or a hand to rescue him or like even peace if he dies. I mean, think of like martyrs. It's not always a pleasant ending. But it's always happy and joyful, I think, because they're confident of their place in Jesus, and there's no fear for them in those times. But yeah, Peter's doubt of Jesus proves unnecessary because immediately Jesus stretches out his hand and he catches Peter. Peter calls out when he is in trouble, and the Lord is not slow to respond to his loved one. Peter calls out when he is in trouble, and the Lord is not slow to respond to his loved one. So to those of you who are even now going through some really tough times, maybe something that you are really afraid of happening is actually happening right now. And maybe that hasn't happened for some of you. But I hate to break it to you, it probably will at some point. And I encourage all of you in those times that even as Peter cries out to Jesus, so should you. Jesus doesn't always give answers, but he never withholds his presence. And he will not let you drown because he loves you so much. Peter also doesn't trust that he is a good enough disciple to do what Jesus is doing. And he doesn't trust himself. So this one is a little trickier and a little less straightforward. But I think that some ways that this can play out in our own lives and in our own heads is like, why would Jesus ever use me to do great things in his name? And sometimes when we find ourselves doing great things, which may or may not be too often, we figure, well, I'm a loser anyway, so I might as well not go through with it. We make excuses for ourselves because we don't feel good enough. But by doing this and settling for less than those great things that God has planned for us, we're forgetting grace and forgetting God, and even insulting him and his power to make all things, even our hearts and minds and actions, new and beautiful and pleasing to him. We're insulting our true new hearts that God gave us when we invited him to come into our lives and make us clean. We are made in the image of God. We are made in the image of God, each and every one of us. And we have the potential to reflect the light of God to the world. We are of immense worth to our Maker. And the potential that we have if we live daily in his grace is unlimited. And don't let anyone, even yourself, tell you otherwise. So, kind of a story about how I feel like I'm risking for Jesus and I'm not sure the way that it's going to turn out. It's kind of in process right now, is that I'm going to Thailand this summer to work at a home for women trying to get out of prostitution. And it feels really scary to me. And if I think about it for too long, it's like, I don't know a word of Thai. I'm like living in the home with these women who may or may not know very much English. I'm teaching English, which I've never done before. I'm going to be going out into these bars, which are basically like strip clubs, and I've never been in any of those before, and I don't know what they're like, and I have no idea how I'm going to respond. And I think it wouldn't be unlikely for me to just like panic and freeze and like not know what to do. So if I think of this for too long, I'm like, Jesus, what am I doing? Like, I had a very strong sense that Jesus was calling me to this summer, and maybe even for a longer period of time in my life. But the way that it's like actually playing out, and my plane tickets are booked, and my visa is like on the way, and all of my funds are raised, but it's like really scary. And without Jesus, I know that it would be a complete failure. So yeah, I think I'm in the midst of that, having the choice to either focus on Jesus and know that he is good and that he has made me new, or I can just like look around and be like, what the heck am I doing? I need to get out of here. But yeah, I don't know how that's going to turn out. I'll let you know. But it's in process, and I think that a lot of us are in process right now, and we have that choice of whether or not to look to Jesus and trust him and trust ourselves, or give in to the lies that we believe that God is not good and that he will not take care of us and that we can't do it. So yeah, and I think I get hung up back to this passage about what Jesus says, you have little faith, why do you doubt? And I think there are a couple of ways that Jesus could have said this. I think one way is like, I mean, imagine Jesus like really exasperated, kind of in this like nasally voice. He's like, oh, you have little faith, why did you doubt? I'm just like here muttering under his breath like, ah, oh, stupid disciples, here they go again, failing, and I have to rescue them. Oh God, why did you punish me by making me come down here and deal with these people when I'm perfect? So yeah, I think that's one way that Jesus could have said this, and it, as ridiculous as it sounds, I think it's kind of familiar. It's the feeling that Jesus is continually disappointed with us and our lives and what they look like. But I think there's this other option, which I like a lot better and which I think is a lot more biblical. Imagine Jesus kind of like running over, and he's like kind of laughing to himself, and he like picks up Peter and he's like, you have little faith, why did you doubt? Like, man, you did so good and you could have gone like so much further. His like face is like filled with grace, and I imagine Jesus like grasping Peter close to him, and yeah, just comforting, because he was like scared, but Jesus is like so pleased that he went for it and he risked it when Peter had never done this before and he didn't know how it was going to turn out, but he trusted Jesus. So when we risk, the result is always that we will be closer to Jesus than when we started. And he will always provide what we need when we do risk. Granted, what he provides isn't always what we expect or what we want, but it is always what we need. So to wrap up for tonight, I think Jesus empowers us to do what he does by the power of his Spirit, because he did it first. Because of that, he has opened a way for us to do those things as well. We follow Jesus where he has already gone, and I challenge you to consider risking. Whatever Jesus is asking you to do, whether it's forgive someone like me or break something off in your life that's really unhealthy, or whether it's just letting yourself trust people more or letting go of someone, trusting God, or maybe you have this like crazy idea of something that you want to do for Jesus and you just are like, ah, oh, I can't do that, but like risk it. Know that Jesus has been there before, and he knows what you're going through, and he will be with you every step of the way in the process. And Peter's motivation for risking anything for this and for actually believing that he could walk on water is so that he could know more of who Jesus is, and it is the same for us. Following Jesus is not just about doing the right thing or about being a good person or impressing someone or feeling good about ourselves. It is about having a relationship with our Maker, and this is ultimately the greatest reward that we could ever have. So what happens when we follow Jesus is that sometimes we fail, sometimes it's like a smashing success, but yeah, again, I challenge you to consider risking the things that seem really scary, because we have no need to doubt or fear, because God is crazy about us, and He loves us so much, and He wants to be close to us, and He wants to use us for His glory. Focus on finding Jesus in the process instead of on the results, and you will not be disappointed. So yeah, that's all I have for tonight. We have another couple of songs for worship tomorrow, I mean tonight, and I'm going to pray for us, and then that'll be it. Father, thank you so much that you are so pleased with us when we risk for you, God, and that you are not a God who is just like sitting up there, like really disappointed with us, but you are just so excited about the things that you have planned for us. Father, I pray that you would be filling us with courage and boldness as we go from this weekend, as we enter back into life. God, that we would just know that you are good, and that you love us, and that as your disciples, you have, yeah, given us the power to do the things that you do by your Spirit. Father, I pray that you would be giving each of us a greater taste of that in the next few days and weeks and years. So, Father, thanks again for this beautiful night and this beautiful place and all these people that are here. And we lift these things to you in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. In your name we pray. Amen. Mm-hmm.